Thank you, Judy. Today's scripture is a familiar one, and for some of you, it might even be your favorite. We tell this story all the time, right? The Good Samaritan. That's a phrase that's become a part of our regular culture, and we call anyone who helps a stranded or struggling person by this name. And I think it's one of the kindest things that you could say of someone. For today, I'd like to just focus on one verse, verse 33. And there are two very key words in this scripture that tell the story in a way that the author was very intentional about doing. The first word in the Greek is splanknizomai, and this means to have compassion. Some translations say to have pity, but in a more raw way, it means to have compassion. Very literally, it means to be moved as in the bowels, which seems like a weird thing to say, right? Colloquially, we might say, we spilled one's guts. The bowels were thought to be sort of the bodily home of mercy and compassion and empathy. And, you know, I think that makes some sense. When you see something that's particularly heart-wrenching, where do you feel it in your body? You feel it in your gut, you know, like, oh, God, that's awful. Oh, I'm so moved. You feel it in your gut. The second word is horao, which means to see. First, the Samaritan sees the man in trouble, and then he is moved with compassion in his very gut. There are two other places in the Gospel of Luke where these two words are used together. In chapter 7, Jesus himself sees a widowed mother grieving for her son who has just died. He sees her and is moved with compassion, and he raises her son to new life. In chapter 15, which is another beloved and familiar story, a father sees his prodigal son coming home from far off, and he sees him, is moved with compassion, and runs out to meet him. Clearly, this is a pattern. In order to have compassion, one must first see. Once you see someone, then you have compassion. Now, this might sound kind of like an obvious observation. Of course, if any one of us sees someone in need, we will have compassion for them, right? Except that in our lifestyle, in our world, we live very curated lives. We can change the channel anytime we want. We don't have to look at the suffering in the world. We can pull our cars directly into the garage in order to avoid seeing our neighbors. We can wear headphones in public in order to send the message, don't talk to me, I'm not interested today. And I'll tell you what, I'm guilty of all three of these things. So I need this sermon maybe more than you all do. These are all things we do to protect ourselves from the opportunity to have compassion, because sometimes compassion is hard and it can be exhausting. This month we're talking about the art of neighboring, and I've been reading this book by the same title. It's been really inspiring to me, and it's all about loving the neighbors who are closest to us, our actual neighbors, the ones right next door. And it's helped me to think about new ways, simple ways, convicting ways that I can love my neighbor as myself. In the very first chapter, the authors tell this amazing story. The co-authors of this book are both pastors, and they were pastors in Denver. And they called together a meeting with like 20 other pastors in Denver, and they invited the mayor to come talk to them because they wanted to figure out a way that their churches could partner together to make Denver a better place to live. Simple as that. How could churches band together and improve the quality of life in their town? So they called these 20 pastors together, and they invited the mayor, and you know, they talked about all sorts of problems in their community. They talked about at-risk kids and latchkey kids and hunger and all sorts of stuff. All of the things that normally come up when you think about what are needs that we have in our community that need to be met in order for this to be a better place to live. The list just went on and on and on. And then the mayor said something that really inspired the pastors. He said, "The majority of the issues that our community is facing would be eliminated or drastically reduced if we could just figure out a way to become a community of great neighbors." The mayor went on to explain that when people identify a problem, they often come to civic officials, and I'll say it happens in churches too. People see a problem in the church and they come to the pastor and they say, "Hey, you should start a program. You should start a program to address this. This is becoming a serious issue." And the mayor shared candidly that, in his opinion, government programs aren't always the best or most effective way to address social issues. They can help, they are important, but we need to be neighbors too. He said that relationships are more effective than programs because they're organic and they're ongoing. The idea is that when neighbors are in relationship with each other, the elderly shut-in gets cared for by the person who lives next door, and the at-risk kid gets mentored by a dad who lives on the same block, and so on and so on. And after the mayor left the meeting, one of the pastors shared and just blurted out, "Am I the only one who is a little bit embarrassed?" I mean, here we are asking the mayor how best we can serve our city, and he basically tells us that it would be great if we could get our churches, our people, to obey the second half of the Great Commandment. In a word, a civic official invited a room full of pastors to get their people to actually obey Jesus. That convicted me. Part of why this book has been so powerful for me personally is that I have realized that I don't know my neighbors at all. I've lived in my house for a year now, and I've spent a whole lot of time getting to know the people in this church. I feel like you are my neighbors, and yet I don't know the people who actually live next door to me. I don't know their names. I don't know their ages. I don't know how long they've lived there or where they're from. I know what cars they drive and how often they mow their lawn. I tell you this because I flunked the quiz that I'm about to give to you. So if you flunk too, you're not the only one. I'm right there with you. The only way to go is up. I have a lot of excuses for why I don't know my neighbors. I'm an introvert, and I function like an extrovert most days here at church. And so by the time I get home, I don't really have any energy for neighborliness. But like I said, those are excuses, and I flunked the quiz. I am sure that you all are much better neighbors to your immediate neighbors than I am. But just to be sure, take a look at the bulletin insert that you have with you. On the backside of the part with the hymn, there's a bunch of squares. The square in the middle is your house or your apartment, wherever you live. And the squares around that are your neighbors. So take a few minutes, pull out that little pencil that's in the back of your pew, or pull a pen out of your purse. And I know your neighborhood might not be exactly set up like this, but just sort of use your imagination and think about the people that surround you. And I want you to just write their names down. Fill it out the best you can. I'll give you a couple minutes. tonight. You can keep working as we continue, but I just want to see a show of hands, no judgment here, because I flunked. How many of you flunked like me? No names. Don't know any neighbors. All right. How many of you know two neighbors' names? Three neighbors' names. Four neighbors' names. Five. Six. Seven. Eight. Yeah. If you don't know many of your neighbors' names, and I see some really good neighbors out here, so like high five from the pulpit, high five. If you don't know many of your neighbors' names, your homework over the next month is to learn them. You can do this in a lot of different ways. You can host a block party in your driveway, like those neighborhood rock parties that I talked about earlier. You can just take a plate of cookies or baked goods over to them. You can offer to mow their lawn. You can even just simply sit out in your front porch and greet people who are walking by and try to strike up a conversation with them. I want to let you know that all of those things that I just listed off, those are hard for me as an introvert. So if they're hard for you, I'm right there with you. It takes some effort, and you got to be intentional about it. If you do know your neighbors, if you are a great neighbor, like Bob Gooling, I think of Bob Gooling when I think of a great neighbor, because he just knows everybody over at Prairie Vista, and he takes care of them and all of those things that that they need. He's right there to help them out. Yeah. There's several more here, too. Absolutely. I saw all your hands up when you said you know all your neighbors. So you can help each other out. If you do know your neighbors, then your homework, Bob, is to deepen your relationship with your neighbors. Learn what's going on in their lives. Ask where they might be going on vacation this summer. Ask about their kids and their grandkids, or maybe their pets. Ask, maybe. This might be an awkward request for some of you, but ask if there's anything in their lives that you could pray for them for. It never hurts to ask, right? You can also do those simple things like host a block party or take a plate of cookies, sit out on your front porch, walk your dogs together, invite somebody over for dinner. Those are always to deepen relationship, to find out more of what's going on in people's lives. So on the bottom of that insert, I'd love for you to just think of 2 to 3 really simple ways that you could get to know your neighbors or deepen relationship with them, and write those down on the bottom of that sheet. I'll give you another minute or so. There's 2 to 3 ways to get to know your neighbors. Whatever might work for you. The rationale behind this homework that I'm giving you to do over the next month is to invite you and me too. In 4 weeks, I promise you that I will come back with this insert, and I'm going to know my neighbor's names, and I will tell you my neighbor's names. The rationale behind this homework is to invite all of us to be more like Jesus. In very simple, concrete ways, to be more like the Good Samaritan, to be more like the Father that welcomes home his prodigal son. We have to exercise and practice our ability to see in order to have compassion and love our neighbors as we ought to. Here's a final note. I think, and I know for myself, that I often confuse neighborliness with friendship. Now, it is a wonderful thing to be able to be friends with your neighbors, and some of you might find that you get to be friends with your neighbors. Maybe you find that you have something in common, or your kids are similar ages and they get to play together, or you have similar backgrounds and values. But this is important. You don't have to be friends in order to love your neighbor. Maybe you have a neighbor who never walks their dog and they bark all the time and you quietly resent them from your living room. That would be my neighbor. Perhaps you have a neighbor who doesn't mow their lawn enough or who leaves their Christmas lights up too long or who leaves things cluttered on their porch. Or maybe they're just a little bit standoffish and you never, you just can't really break in. You can't get to know them. Maybe they're just deeply suspicious of you and you can't get to know them. Maybe you have very little in common with your neighbor. Maybe they're from a different country and maybe they practice another religion. Guess what? You can still love your neighbor. You can still learn about them and love them as Jesus would. You don't have to be friends in order to love your neighbor as Jesus would. So I want to go back to that quote that I read from Mr. Rogers at the beginning of the service. We live in a world in which we need to share responsibility. We share responsibility as Christians, yes, but also as members of this society, as citizens of this wonderful nation, and as people who live in this beautiful town. We live in a world in which we need to share responsibility. It's easy to say, it's not my child, not my community, not my world, not my problem. But then there are those, like the Good Samaritan, who saw the need and responded. Let's be heroes for each other. Let's be the kind of people that Fred Rogers called his heroes. Let's be like Jesus.